Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
This is Kathy Smith recording Mike Ruth. Today is Saturday, July 25th, 2021, and today we're going to talk about Lee Summit Baseball. I'd like to introduce you to Mike Ruth. Mike, tell me a little bit about yourself.
My name is Mike Ruth. I'm 59 years old. I grew up in Lee Summit. I played in the Lee Summit Baseball Association from the time I was 6 until the time I was 18. I played on all the Lee Summit teams. I umpired in Lee Summit probably from the time I was 14 until I was 25 or so. I was the groundskeeper for the ballpark 1 year, and I managed the American Legion team from 1980 to 1985. So I kind of did a little bit of everything up there over the course of time.
So back when you got started in baseball, was there T-ball at that time?
There was. There was T-ball was the first, and it might have been the first year they had it. That would have been about 1966 or 67. And I think we played one game. I think we had 4 or 5 practices, and I think we made our own T-shirts and put your own number on it, magic marker, and played one game, I think is what we did that year.
Okay, and was your dad involved in coaching that time? Or
my dad didn't coach, but my dad sponsored a bunch of teams. He had a gas station next door to where the fire station is now called Summit Oil, and he sponsored teams a lot through the years. And my mom was the president of the Booster Club and ran the concession stand a lot of summers.
Okay, and then what position, when you started Little League, how did they determine what position would work best for you?
I think it was like herding cats. I think they just let you run out there to wherever you thought you wanted to play, and that's kind of where they let you play. It was all coached by dads. There wasn't any science to it. I think they just kind of rotated people around, let everybody try a little bit of everything at the younger ages.
So what was your favorite position?
Early on, it was third base and pitcher, and then by the time I got more into high school, it was catcher.
So I think Dave Hicks told me that he was very interested in the way the catcher's uniform was. He liked all that equipment, so that's the reason why he liked to play a catcher. Would that have anything to do with
it? I think I was probably the same way. I think I enjoyed it, except when it was hot like it is today. We'd play 2 or 3 games in a day. But, yeah, I think that was kind of the draw to it. Plus, it was one position nobody else wanted to play. So if you were a catcher, you could probably always find a team that needed one.
Okay, and so tell me about those games. I understand it was 3 nights a week at Lee McKeegan Park. I heard 2 stories. In the beginning, there were either 3 or 4 fields, and then eventually they built more fields across the street. So tell me about playing on those hot summer evenings.
There was 4 fields. The 2 lower fields were probably from like 12 on down. And the middle field, which was closest to the concession stand, was kind of more for the 13, 14, 15-year-olds, and the one that was right up at the corner of Chipman and Douglas was for the high school age, maybe, yeah, any of the high school age guys. And you would start playing in April. Every night there was a game at 6 and a game at 8:30 on both fields. And maybe you would have 1 practice a week. I'm probably going to say we played maybe 12 or 14 games. It wasn't, you know, as intense as it is now. You played 2 or 3 times a week, and usually there was an all-star game the very end of July or the very first week of August. If you made the all-star team, there was one night where they had an all-star game and you got a little trophy, and that was the end of the season.
And so it seems like the concession stand was really their big fundraiser to keep things moving in terms of paying for, you know, any equipment people would need, or even some of the just funding different things. I think when Mrs. Zorn told me that they even were able to fund some tarps, although they weren't sure how to put them on the field. They didn't realize how heavy those would be, and if it rained, what a pain in the neck that would be. So tell me a little bit about that concession stand situation.
It was. My mom was really proud because she helped build the addition to it and got air conditioning in it, but everybody worked up there. If you were a kid, you worked up there. I think the rule was you had to work one shift or you had to pay $5 to pay a kid to work your shift for you. And so back then, that ballpark was kind of the meeting place in town. That and the swimming pool were the two places. I mean, we were up there every night. You either playing or maybe you had practice or some of us would umpire. But even if you didn't have a game, you just went up there. It was just kind of the place where everybody in town was. And you'd work in the concession stand or whatever else. And that was kind of the heartbeat of the whole place. And it did pay for everything, you know, the lights and the umpires. And, you know, I think the team sponsors paid for the uniforms and very minimal amount of gear. But I think the concession stand paid for the whole rest of the budget after that.
So tell me your parents' names.
My dad was Max Ruth, and he owned Summit Oil Company, which was at 211 South Douglas back then. And my mom's name was Jean, and she was kind of a stay-at-home mom like most moms were back then. But that booster club was kind of her passion. And then later on, when they were trying to get a high school-age summer team started in Lee Summit, which they'd kind of come and gone, she ended up being the president of the Western Missouri Baseball Association, which was kind of all of the American Legion-age teams from Sedalia to Blue Springs to Lee Summit to St. Joe, everything on kind of the western half of the state of Missouri. She was kind of the commissioner of it, and she won over some of the older crusty guys that have been coaching those Legion teams for years and years and years that I think were a little skeptical in the beginning. But that's kind of how that league got started, because back then there really wasn't, there wasn't great places for high school age junior and senior guys to go play in the summertime.
So it sounds like women really played an important part. As I'm doing these interviews, I'm finding out the key role that the women played in this Lee Summit baseball. And so we, you know, I'm really appreciating those stories.
A lot. They ran the concession stand. They kept the scorebook during the game. They shuffled kids back and forth. You know, back then, you know, the moms, a lot of them didn't work. But, you know, you would ride your bike up there, or your parents would just drop you off, and somebody's mom would take you home at the end of the night that was up there watching another game. So you knew if you were up there, if you didn't have a ride home, you could start scrounging around about 10 o'clock and somebody's mom would be up there and give you a ride back. But yeah, the moms, they ran that concession stand and it was a tight ship.
And to say nothing of keeping your uniforms clean and all of that kind of stuff,
yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah, and back then there was one. It, you know, now yeah. If you're on these teams and they have five or six different ones, there was just one back then. So yeah, they had to do a lot of work.
Do you recall where your first set of baseball equipment was purchased? I always think that's kind of interesting.
You know, you would go over to Nil Brothers over at Truman Corners. Well, first of all, there was Summit Sports in downtown Lee Summit. You could get a glove and a bat there. You could get kind of some basic. And Western Auto, you could get kind of some basic. You could buy a baseball. You could get a bat. You could get a glove. But Nil Brothers was kind of the place where you would go get spikes when you got old enough to have spikes. And back then, they had these white Puma brand spikes. They were white with suede stripe on them. And depending on what color your team was that summer, you'd dye the stripe red or blue or green or whatever color your team was for that summer. So that was downtown. There was enough. You could get some basic sporting goods kind of stuff. But Nil Brothers kind of had a little bit more. If you wanted a fancy glove or you wanted a pair of spikes, you couldn't get those in Lee Summit. You'd have to go over there to do it.
Did y'all ever go into Kansas City at Gateway or any of those Bunting or any of those places?
I don't remember ever doing that. I remember buying it, you know, when I finally got old enough and I wanted to buy a nice glove. I remember going over there because the Lee Summit ones were more just kind of the gloves like you'd get at Target or something now, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted kind of the next grade up of stuff, that's where you went. They had a little nicer.
So how did you learn how to take care of a good glove?
My dad, he would use saddle soap in them. That was, you know, he delivered gas to all the farmers and cow people around town. So that was the first thing he said was that was the best thing ever was saddle soap.
Not neat's foot oil?
Not neat's foot oil. Saddle soap or shaving cream, either one.
Okay.
They were both good. And then get a good pocket and get two baseballs in there and rubber band it together. But again, back then, you know, everybody played every sport. So now you have a $300 or $400 or $500 glove and it's kind of kept in a little shrine. Back then, the summer would be over and you'd just put it in the garage. And, you know, practice, you'd go sign up for Lee Summit Baseball Association in February. There was a big day and that was kind of a neat day because that was the first kind of day of baseball And then practice would be in March, and you'd go out in the garage the day before and dig your glove out, and maybe then you put a little something on it, but, you know, it was different.
So do you remember some of your early coaches? Who was your first coach that you can remember?
It was Lance Hurt's dad, and I don't remember what his name was. He lived over by where Fazoli's is now, and I used to go over there. I had Ken Bell, who had three sons who were all pretty good players, and he ended up, when they tried to get this high school age team kind of started, he was the guy that they talked into. They thought he could handle coaching older kids and trying to get a team established. So he was really the first coach of the older group. So I played for him when I was probably 12 or 13. And then again, when I was 17 and 18, he came back and really kind of steered things in that direction. And I didn't play for John O'Brien. He was kind of the legendary guy that everybody wanted to play for, and he coached for, I don't know, 30 years. I don't know if he even ever had a kid that played in the deal. But he, you know, he could really coach, and it wasn't about skill and technique as much as it was just he ran an organized practice, and he kind of knew how to teach baseball, and he was tough on kids, but you loved his approval. And he was one of the guys that, you know, I think is kind of the legendary guy. He was the president of the Baseball Association for a long time, and kept it afloat and kept it moving forward. And I had Coach Sanders was my coach for 1 year when I was 16. And it was just, you know, that was kind of a different deal. You know, before it was somebody's dad and you just saw him at practice time and maybe, and you played your game, you know, you met up at the ballpark and played, you know, the year with him, we played out of town just in Kansas City. But we'd go over to his house and we'd just talk about baseball and talk about life and talk about, it was the first coach I remember where kind of got to know him as a person. He kind of got to know you as a person. And we were at that age where it was important to have somebody to bounce things off of. And it was kind of your first foray into really playing competitive sports against people from out of town. And so he kind of steered you through how to compete and how to handle playing people you didn't know and what happened when you kind of got punched in the nose and had to get back up. And I remember spending a lot of time at his house just sitting out on the front porch down there on Douglas Street, and just, you know, you would start talking about baseball, but 2 hours later you'd probably be talking about something completely different. He gave a lot of time. A lot of those dads back then gave a lot of time, but he went above and beyond. I just remember talking about, you know, just life and stuff and baseball and everything else. And but back then, you know, it was a lot of dads, and it was a blue-collar town. It was a lot of dads who were tradespeople and farmers, and, you know, they worked 8 to 5 out in the sun and then showed up in their work boots and their blue jeans and hit ground balls to you for a couple hours just so there would be enough coaches to run teams. And most of them probably weren't greatly skilled coaches. They didn't have any training on how to coach baseball, but they'd played when they were kids and knew enough to kind of organize a practice. But, you know, looking back on it now, just how hard those people worked back then, and then to go out of that and spend another 2 hours, 3 or 4 days a week coaching the game or running a practice or something like that, they were pretty special people.
And so in terms of how these coaches, what role they played in your sounds like in your early upbringing, they were really good role models for you kids.
Yeah, they were really great people. Yeah, I don't think we, you know, appreciated them enough. We didn't understand, you know, that they had a job that they worked hard at for 40 hours a week in addition to coming out and coaching us. And I think Coach Sanders was maybe the first time where you kind of saw that, you know, saw him as a person, not just somebody's dad that was out there trying to run practice. And some of them, looking back, some of them were really bad coaches, didn't know much, couldn't manage a baseball game, but we were just playing against people in the summer. This wasn't the World Series. No one was trying to, you know, now every game is overcoached, overhyped, over everything. We were just a bunch of kids from Lee Summit that wanted to play baseball in the summer, and somebody's dad had to be there to run it. And so, again, some of them had done it for a long time and were pretty good at it. Some of them didn't know much about baseball, but they, you know, they gave their time, and so that there'd be enough coaches so that everybody could play. And they, you know, we didn't, No one got cut until you were 17 or 18 age level, so anybody that wanted to play could play. So the skill level on any of these teams would be from guys who maybe were good enough to play in college to guys who were bad 8-year-old players. But everybody that wanted to play got a chance to play.
One of his sons, Brent Sanders, told me a story. And I don't know how old he was at this time, but Jim was, I guess he used to go around all the different games, scouting all the time.
He did.
With his little notebook and everything. And he said, Brent said he can remember one time that whoever was coaching was having a terrible time and doing a terrible job. And so Jim went down onto the field to help that guy out because he kind of felt bad for him.
I believe that.
So I thought that was kind of a humorous situation for somebody that I think he really understood baseball. Did he ever tell you about any of his experiences growing up playing baseball?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe I'm probably somewhere out there one of those days he did, but I don't really remember much about it.
Okay. Seems like a natural statistician.
He was kind of one of the first guys that really saw the value of playing somewhere other than just against the Lee Summit kids. And you know, it kind of pyramids out. You know, everybody wants to play when they're 8, and then there's a few less at 10. And so he was coaching 15 and 16-year-olds, and there was only 2 or 3 Lee Summit teams. And he was kind of the first guy that had enough vision to say, well, why don't we go play some of these other teams from other towns and, you know, give kids a chance to get out of Lee Summit and play somebody else for a minute. And he was, you know, his vision of what could be was a lot greater than most of the other guys who, you know, hey, my kid plays on the team and give me that T-shirt that says coach on the back and I'll show up and run practice and games. But that was about it.
So he sounds like he really had a vision for you kids, which is really
extraordinary.
So when did you think that you may have a career in baseball? What made you, how did that click in there?
It wasn't from playing. I wasn't very good. I was really young, so I came back and played on the Legion team after my freshman year in college because I was still young enough to play. And then the next year I came back and they were just trying to find somebody to kind of run the team and keep it going. And I helped coach. The guy that coached at Lee Summit Community Hospital sponsored it. And Dr. John Murphy, who was a doctor, you know, now you look back at that, the guy was a doctor. And he was coaching this team where we were playing, I don't know, 3 or 4 nights a week. And we were traveling. I mean, this was, you went to Blue Springs and you went to Independence and you went to Sedalia. So somehow he was a doctor and found 4 nights a week to go coach on top of it. And we weren't very good and it wasn't very organized. And then my junior year of college, I started helping out with the baseball team at Missouri. And that really kind of sparked wanting to come back here and trying to get this better organized and to keep the Lee Summit kids in Lee Summit. Because back then, the high school age Lee Summit kids, there wasn't really a team. And then we just kind of started this Legion team, and it wasn't very good because the good guys wouldn't play on it. They would go play, most of them would play in the Ban Johnson League or the Casey Stengel League in Kansas City, which was a pretty good college league. And you had to be a pretty good high school player to play there because it was mostly local college guys. But it was, once we got it started, it was great because it was kind of Lee Summit against William Chrisman and against Truman and against Blue Springs. But it took a while to kind of get that up and running. And I remember my first couple of years, I would have to try and go basically recruit the kids that would normally go play in the Ban Johnson League and try to sell them on, well, why don't you just stay and play in Lee Summit? It'll actually be more fun. It'll be all the people you went to high school with, and you'll be playing just like you were in high school. And once it kind of got rolling and the Lee Summit kids stayed in town and played, we had a good team. We had a pretty good series of teams there.
So then from there, where did you go?
I coached at Missouri from 1982 to 88. I kind of started off as bullpen catcher, third coach, groundskeeper, everything else. And by the time I left, I was the first assistant. And then I took a job with the Minnesota Twins in 1989, and I've been with them for 33 years.
So tell me, how does that work, being a hometown boy and working with the Minnesota Twins, the competitiveness of the Royals and the Twins?
It is, although the Royals are my second favorite team. I'll always have a soft spot. I have a lot of friends that work over there. I root for them. I wish we were in different divisions. That would make it easier. But Dayton Moore hired my daughter to be an usher. One time we were on a scouting trip in Omaha, and he was there watching. We were watching the Omaha Royals, and my daughter worked him for an usher job. And I see him all the time. There's they have a lot of scouts that I've worked with, so I'm a Royals fan too. But it is kind of strange. You do have to root against them some years. We've kind of staggered our successes. The years we've been good, they've been bad, and the years they've been good, we've been bad. So we haven't really had to fight it out too many years out of all those.
So tell me some of the humorous experiences you've had and your position with the Twins.
Oh, gosh, there's, you know, just so many. You know, when I first started with the Twins, we didn't have computers. We didn't have GPS. We, you know, you worked by maps and word of mouth, and there was no internet, and there was no cell phones. And so back then, you just were beating the bushes. Now today, it's so streamlined. There's so many events. There's so much stuff on the internet that there's a lot less of the wild goose chases there used to be. But back then, every day was a completely different adventure. Guys would hide in their cars and sleep in their cars because they knew somebody was going to see a player and they didn't know. They just knew that there was a player and that guy was getting up early to go see him because he wouldn't tell you where he was going. So guys would sleep in their car out in the parking lot of the hotel so they could follow people places. And we drafted guys who were terrible players because we didn't know any better, and it was a lot more fun back then, kind of like a lot of other things. And just, you know, now it's everybody, you know, all the good players are on the internet, there's video on the internet, you got a GPS. You know, back then just finding the ballparks a lot of places was half the battle. You know, you get to, you know, but you know, if you wanted, somebody wanted to come in town and see Lee Summit High School, well, you'd go to Lee Summit High School, well, the baseball field wasn't there, so you had to figure out, well, where the heck do you go if you want to go watch those guys play. So
is it all going to be, when you scout, do you scout all only competitive teams, or do you also look around for maybe that kid that's not, that maybe the parents don't have the funding to be on those competitive teams? How does that work?
That's where things have really changed, and I think way for the worse. You know, in almost every sport now, I'd say by the age of about 12, you have to decide if you're going to get in or get out, and then there's a pretty sizable financial commitment, whether it's AAU basketball or 7-on-7 football or travel team baseball. And unfortunately, we've forced people to specialize at an early age, which I think has been bad for all of them. You know, even a lot of the better baseball players are guys that played more than one sport. But now they get to about junior high and someone says, well, we have a year-round basketball program. We have a year-round football program. If you're going to play baseball, you need to play 60 games in the summer. And so it kind of all, they get put in these teams, these travel ball teams, from the time they're, some of them 8 years old, 10 years old, and mom and dad are spending thousands and thousands of dollars for lessons and equipment and travel and tournaments and everything else. But we've lost a lot of, I think back to when I was managing that Legion team, we had some good players. We had Doug Bach and Robert Tai, who both came and played at Missouri when I was coaching there. We had Mike Revan, who went to Central Missouri State and was the all-time hits leader at Central Missouri State. We had guys that got college scholarships and went on and played, but we also had a lot of guys that had just played every summer. They weren't great players. They weren't college-level players, but they loved to play. They would show up for every practice and for every game and love to play. And the game itself, it's sad that we've lost a lot of those people because we've told them at 12, well, either you need to make a giant commitment or you have to stop. You know, a lot of those guys, they paid whatever Lee Summit charged back then, $100 to play for the summer. But they loved to play. They were there every day. They turned into great fans. They probably were the people that ended up coaching little league teams down the road. Now, they probably doubled back because of their love for the game and coached the 8- and 10-year-old, you know, teams later on. And we've run those people out of the game to a large degree. You know, it used to be in Lee Summit, you could play for sure until you were 14 without ever thinking about getting cut in the summertime, and probably until you were 17 or 18. And now, you know, the programs have been so whittled down that the good players now, they jump off the Lee Summit Baseball Association program and they jump onto the 4 or 5 really good famous travel ball teams in the Kansas City area. So instead of Leafs Summit having a good Legion team by the time they're 17, 18. Well, the good guys play for, you know, there's four or five in Kansas City that they pick the two good guys from Leafs Summit and the two good guys from Grandview and one good guy from Harrisonville. And some of the national level teams, they just meet and show up for tournaments, and they're from 20 different states. So there's no Virgil's Garage. They're the, you know, they're the whatever, the Warriors, but they've got a shortstop from Georgia and a catcher from Florida and a pitcher from Massachusetts, and they just all meet in Atlanta for a weekend and play and go their separate ways. So the game, how it's all run, it's changed a lot. And it really, once you start siphoning off the good players, it just makes it hard to have good programs because nobody wants to be on a team where it's just kind of the leftover guys. Once you get to be a certain age, you know, the 17 and 18 year old guys, I think they've worked hard. I don't have much connection with anymore. I know they've had Legion teams. But it's harder to run when a lot of the good guys turn you down. They want to go play someplace else, and you're left with guys that don't, you know, enjoy playing that much.
So these young fellas that come from all these different states, and they play these games. How can you develop a camaraderie?
None. They're mercenaries.
Okay.
There was a player named Alex Lang that went to Lee Summit West High School. It's in the major leagues right now. And he signed to go to LSU, which, again, the national recruiting of baseball has changed in the last 30 years. It used to be if a guy went to Lee Summit High School and was a good player, he was probably going to go to Missouri, Kansas, Central Missouri. Well, now, again, Alex Lang went to LSU. And when he was still in high school, he was on a summer team based out of Louisiana. So he didn't play at Lee McKeegan or at Legacy Park. He would meet up with whatever team they would assemble, because there's about 20 of these nationwide power summer teams. And there's a tournament every weekend. And there's a couple that are like the crown jewels of the whole thing. And you just put a team together. You don't know each other particularly well. It's not like there's five guys from Lee Summit. There's Alex Lang from Lee Summit. And there's two guys from New Orleans and a guy from Lafayette, Louisiana. And three guys from Houston. And you show up and introduce yourself. And here's your uniform to put on. You play for a weekend. Then you give the uniform back. And 2 weeks later, you meet them in a different town.
And it seems like it's lost a lot of its charisma, sort of, if you call it baseball charisma, I guess, for lack of a better term, you know, just it is kind of mercenary, like you said, and I think of now I'm a single mom, so my son was not into sports. I tried to get him into baseball. We tried everything, but anyway, debate ended up being his thing, but just funding his buying suits for him when he went out of town to debate on the weekends. His food and all that stuff cost a lot of money, and I can't imagine how frustrating it must be to some of these parents that may have a kid that may have this potential. All they need is a chance, but they just can't pay those big fees, and they don't want their kid to necessarily have a mercenary outlook on the sport.
It's a big concern with Major League Baseball now that it's turned into a country club sport. That's who we get. We get the country club kids. We get the rich suburban kids that can afford to do it. Back, you know, even when I was coaching here in mid-80s, I mean, we had two bags. One, we had a bag of baseballs, and we had an old Army duffel bag that had two bats and a set of catcher's gear and three batting helmets. And that was it. Now, kids have thousands of dollars, you know, of their own personal equipment. You have to have two or three gloves, and you have to, you know, a baseball bat now is $300 or $400, and a glove is $300 or $400, and you need another glove, and you need a shin guard protector, and you need an elbow protector, and you need $200 sunglasses, and we've priced people out. And again, they're all affiliated with some kind of a training program now, so you're paying a training place hundreds of dollars a month for lessons and to be on their team. And now every time you travel to a tournament, some of them are sponsored by big companies, so they don't, you know, the bite's a little less there. But if you want to go watch your kid play in the summertime, you know, I again, Alex Lang and Monte Harrison, two Lee Summit West guys, are both in the big leagues now. I would guess in their high school years in the summertime, never played a game anywhere near Lee Summit. They were on a travel ball team that played in, again, the big tournament at the end of the fall, the one that everybody wants to win, is in Jupiter, Florida. So, there's 200 teams. There's 200 teams show up and play in it.
So is there any thought of course, it behooves the major leagues to get these polished guys, you know, but, I mean, do major leagues ever discuss the fact that that original small-town event that happened, you know, three nights a week and every Friday night during the summer is kind of just going away totally? I mean, do they worry about that at all or not?
A lot. We talk about it a lot. It's, I don't think it's good for how guys, you know, again, most of them aren't going to go on and do that. So just the relationship of playing in town and playing for, you know, Bobby's dad and, you know, being around 10 guys on your team that you know and your families know each other, you know, you lose out on that. And I don't think anybody likes the current system. They don't play, you know, for all these tournaments and stuff now, they don't play that much. You can't find a high school age game Monday through Wednesday. It used to be Lee Summit would play Blue Springs on Monday, and then Lee Summit would play Sedalia on Tuesday, and Lee Summit would play one of the independence teams on Thursday. Well, now it's all tournaments. It's all weekend jamboree, 50 teams show up in one place, and it's all tournaments. So there's very little practice. There's less games because it's all built around these tournaments. There's no nightly game to prepare for. So I think we've lost a lot by the way things have run. And again, the game now, the amateur game, is being run by probably better coaches. They're probably more skilled. They probably have, but it's lost a lot of the connection with people. You know, you pay a guy to coach you now. It's not somebody that volunteers to do it. You spend thousands of dollars to be on a team now. It's not Lee Summit where you used to pay $25 and it got you through. So guys now are better coached and they're better prepared to be a college or professional player, but at the sacrifice of kind of the community feeling and the, you know, when I was growing up, all the way till I got married and got out of coaching in town, the ballpark was where everybody met in the summertime. And you either played or you were up there watching your friends play, or you're watching your friends' brothers and sisters play, or you're umpiring, or you're working at the concession stand, and now, you know, it's just not that same atmosphere anymore. There's fewer teams. It's not the hub of the community like it used to be. And part of it's because the ballpark's moved to a different place. It's not downtown like it used to be. Mm-hmm. But it's lost a lot of appeal there. And I don't think it's any one person's fault. It's just it's evolved that way across America, and it's evolved that way in sports other than baseball. But it's taken away a lot of the kind of community sense to the whole thing.
And so you don't see, there's probably not going to be any way to reverse that, or I mean, I don't even know what you would do to.
I don't think you can anymore, because I think everybody's so focused. Moms and dads, coaches are so focused on national rankings and winning tournaments and all that. Again, from the age of, I have people I scout with who have young sons that have they give them, you know, now, it used to be like at least some, you didn't get a trophy unless your team won the championship or you made the All-Star team. So I remember I got my first one when I was probably 13 or 14 because I was never on a good team. And I think back in my early days, the All-Star team, I think you got a patch. So, but now they have a tournament every weekend. Everybody, and they're all the national championship tournament. And these 7 and 8 year olds, I have a picture a guy sent me the other day. His son has, and they're junky and cheapy, but 15 rings because they won the national championship, and you get a ring that probably costs $4. But I mean, it's or a giant like world wrestling, you know, championship belt, or it's so geared towards social media, towards being famous, towards what's your national ranking, toward, and the parents are, it, you know, the 7-year-old doesn't really care. It's the parents that are kind of driving the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So there's no more, you know, Virgil's Garage versus Western Auto. You know, that's kind of looked down on now. You need to be on the ultimate U7 Platinum All-Star Championship team. Not Virgil's Garage, not Summit Oil. That's, you know, that's well below what you should be trying to do.
One of the things, too, is Don Cahan, local guy, sponsored teams for years and years. Did you know him at all, or can you tell me a little bit about him?
I just remember the dealership being out there, but I remember how many of those downtown merchants, especially just, you know, back then, there wasn't a lot of money just laying around, you know. But Pappy's Pizza always had a team, and Don Cahan always had a team, and everybody, you know, Farmers Trust had a team, and Bank of Lee Summit had a team, and John's Barbershop had a team, you know, and they would pay whatever it cost, you know, probably a couple hundred bucks that they probably couldn't afford, but just so that all the kids had a place to play. And again, that part of that was probably John O'Brien, you know, finding enough sponsors to cover the cost of everything. But, you know, anymore, I don't even know. I would guess probably at the 7, 8, 9-year-old level, some of that still exists, but not, you know, not with the older kids anymore.
So, what about, did you ever play at Summit Park?
Yeah, that was kind of like, if you got rained out at Lee McKeegan, sometimes they'd play makeup games there. The field wasn't very good, and it was like the backup place to end up playing. Lee McKeegan was kind of, after everybody moved out to Legacy and it kind of got run down, as much as I miss having the ballpark there, I think what they've done with it's fantastic, that it's kind of has a new life. And there is a little area out there that's kind of dedicated to the old ballpark when it was a baseball field. But that was kind of the backup place. So there's enough rain out, they play makeup games there or something. It wasn't, I'm trying to think where else that we used to play.
Did you play at Westview at all?
We did. And then the girls kind of took that over. It kind of turned into the softball, because I used to umpire there. I had a key to the light box there. I would umpire and then turn the lights off at night when we got there.
So you umpired the Powder Puff League?
I did. That's, yeah.
So how was that?
For a couple of years, fine. But back then, you know, I umpired, I probably started umpiring when I was 14-ish. And I did the 8 and 10-year-old games. But nobody's mom and dad yelled and screamed at you now. I mean, you know, my daughter's all played over there. I had one daughter that played college softball, and I couldn't sit there and listen to it anymore. You know, it's a whole different, I don't know what happened. I don't know. Back then, you just took your kid. They're just going to play for a couple hours. You would sit there and clap and root for the other team, and now it's yell and scream and everything else. It's probably rough to try an umpire up there or coach up there. The moms and dads are, It's a whole different world than it used to be.
Jim Sanders told me that he umpired for the Powder Puff League, and he said those mothers were some of the worst ever, because he'd make a call, you know, and then the mothers would just like get on his back. I said, well, what do you expect? You know, they're protecting their daughters. And then I think of one of the gentlemen that coached Powder Puff said it was really funny, because freshman year, there were all these fresh-faced girls and everything, you know, they're playing and everything. By the sophomore year, they discovered boys, and so they started wearing makeup, and he said, you'd see behind the catcher's mask, eyeliner and eyebrow pencil and rouge and lipstick and everything, because they realized that all the boys were coming to watch them play.
I did that, and there was a guy named Russ Weber, who still lives here in town.
I interviewed him.
He ran the umpires, and so I would, you know, again, there was probably 20 of us maybe that umpired back then. So I would give him my either playing or coaching schedule, and the nights that we didn't have a game, I would umpire. And then, you know, all the way up till doing like the high school level guys once I stopped coaching. But I mean, there was just kind of a small group of guys. You'd show up there, you would back in on the Chipman Road side. It wasn't any place marked, but that's kind of where the umpires parked, because you'd get there first, and you'd get there at 5:15 for the 6 o'clock game. There's a lot of nights where the 8:30 game would end, it would be 11, and we would still sit out there and talk for 2 more hours, just about baseball, with Russ Weber, and there's a guy named Jack Robinson that umpired a lot, that was kind of a younger guy, who was kind of more our age, and we would just sit out there and talk about what happened in your game tonight, and what, you know, what did you see, and what's, you know, again, that was just part of, there just seemed to be a lot of opportunities to learn baseball at that park. The young kids would be up there and play cup ball for hours on end up there on top of the hill. Or
so what is cup ball?
Just take a wadded up cup and throw it and hit it with your hand and run around bases like a crazy person. But or they'd stand there and just throw a tennis ball against the concession stand for hours on end. You know, it was way less formal and I think maybe way better in a lot of ways for just as a way to grow up instead of everything having to be coached and structured and everything else. You just used to go up there and spend the day.
Other things that you were interested in and growing up in Lee Summit, could you tell me about some of those?
Well, the big thing every summer was the Jackson County Fair up there by where the swimming pool is. And they would bring, you know, the carnival rides that looked like they might fall apart at any moment. I'm surprised no one ever got killed by one of those things falling apart. And every politician that was running for office that fall would have a tent. And every, you know, window replacement company and all that. But you'd go up there, they had a demo derby. They used to have a rink up there that had, they'd use it for rodeo one night and demo derby another night. And that was kind of the big thing at the end of the summer. You'd go up there, it probably lasted a week, ride the rides and eat bad food and go to all the tents and watch the demo derby. And that was kind of the main thing. The swimming pool was kind of the big thing that kind of went in when I was a kid. But the ballpark was, I mean, that's just where people ended up most nights that time of year.
Whereabouts did you live in Lee Summit?
We lived over by Westview Elementary, over on that side of town.
Over in Lincolnwood and all that?
Yeah, we lived right at the corner of Ward and O'Brien.
Okay.
We had a vacant lot next to us. My dad finally ended up buying the vacant lot because it was our baseball field, football field, everything else, and he bought it and just held on to it for 10 or 12 years when my brothers and I were growing up. We built a backstop. We would line it off for football. We had a basketball court on it. It was like and every neighborhood in Lee Summit back then would have like a vacant lot, and you would go two blocks away and play that group of guys. You know, and every place had its own little set of ground rules. You know, if it went up on the one guy's roof, it was a triple, and if it went whatever there, and you should go outside and play all summer with whoever in the neighborhood would show up that day.
So what happened to Summit Oil, the business?
My dad sold it to the guy who owned Sharp Long, and then he, about not too long after he sold it, he found out there was a leak in one of the tanks, and so he just turned it, he kind of used it as a place to store his Sharp Long trucks and kind of had a second headquarters down there. Now it's a real estate office. But you still sell as a gas station, you still have the big bay doors and all that.
Do you have pictures of Summit Oil or any of that kind of stuff?
I probably do, yeah. Yeah, it was, and back then, all the downtown merchants, I remember, nobody ever used cash. John the barber would come down and need a set of snow tires, and my dad would trade 20 haircuts for it. So we'd go get our haircut, and he had a little piece of paper in the drawer, and he'd keep track, and, you know, if we needed a TV, he'd go down to Hartley's and get a TV, and then Hartley's would have an account at my dad's place, and so they'd have, whatever, $200 worth of free gas coming. And
kind of like the barter system?
Yeah, it was all barter down there. Prasnik's Jewelry was kind of right next door, and no one down there ever used cash. It was all barter between all those guys down there.
So what were your, did you go into some of the, I think probably back then, were the soda fountains still in existence?
The one at the corner of 3rd and Douglas was Rexall Drugs, and it had a soda fountain in there when I was younger. I would say probably like mid-60s to maybe late 60s. I remember watching them make a Coke with the syrup and then putting the carbonated water in it. So I do remember that place. There was a drive-in on the corner. On the other corner there was Willie's Drive-In, and then there was a Dog and Suds out there on 291 that had the giant heavy glasses that you could barely hold when you were a kid.
And then when you got older, did you cruise
Third Street? Sure. Sure. Yeah, you turned around at Sonic. That was the turnaround at that end. And you go back the other way and then go across the railroad tracks and turn around somewhere like about Jefferson or so. Yeah, it was kind of pointless. But yeah, we went to Pizza Inn after football games on Chipman there. That was the place for that. But yeah, we drove up and down Third Street.
So what were some of your favorite classes in high school?
P.E. P.E. I wasn't too prepared for college when I got there. But the, you know, again, those we had great PE teachers back there. Hank Garretts taught at Pleasant Leaf for 1,000 years, and Don Lang, and it was kind of like these guys that coached Little League baseball. I'm not sure any of them was a, you know, like Hank Garretts. He coached the 8th grade basketball team, and he played some baseball, but he just, in terms of helping you grow up, and you know, he kind of scared you at first, and you kind of got to know them and realized they were pretty good guys. But there were so many people like that kind of kept you on the straight and narrow. You know, and again, Lee Summit was 15,000 back then, so if you got in trouble, it took 2 seconds before you got back to your parents. Mm-hmm. But there was a great support system of people who were coaches, who were PE teachers, who were Little League football, baseball, basketball coaches that, you know, no one confused them with some kind of great coach, but they kind of, you know, if it wasn't for them, the town wouldn't have, you know, they were kind of the pillars of the town. They, if it wasn't for them, there wouldn't have been places to play. And, you know, most of them would just show up right after work and give of their time. And those coaches, I'm sure, got paid about nothing to help coach those teams. And it wasn't about Pleasant Leaf Junior High being the greatest 8th grade basketball team of all time. It was more about learning how to play and be a good teammate and be a good person and grow up a little bit and learn how to take criticism. And there was really a lot of really good coaches around here in that area. And they probably still are today, but I think the focus has shifted more towards things other than that.
So in summation, what would you, in a few words, what would you say about your experience in Lee Summit and how that not only has helped you with your career, but also in your family life?
Well, I'm really thankful now looking back for how many people took time and donated their time to help all of us, whether it was baseball or football or basketball or whatever. There's just a lot of really good people that you look back now and realize they were, you know, grinding out a living and I'm sure wanted to go home and just take it easy at the end of a hard day. And how many people like that touched a lot of people's lives and I think kind of made you see that there was possibilities, whether it was, you know, I got lucky and ended up being involved in professional athletics, but just that there was a kind of a code of conduct that you should live by. And I think that kind of, you still hear some of those coaches' voices in the back of your head, but also that there was possibilities outside of Lee Summit back then. Because back then, you know, when I grew up, I never thought I'd see the ocean. That might have been the moon. I didn't know anybody that had seen an ocean in their life or, you know, right, there was one kid that went to the Grand Canyon, and there was another guy that had seen Mount Rushmore, but the thought of anything bigger than kind of growing up in Lee Summit and living in Lee Summit, and I remember talking to Coach Sanders, I remember that was one of the things we would talk about, was just, you know, you could live in Oklahoma if you wanted to, or, right, you could go play baseball and see California, and that seemed like Pluto or something like that. It just didn't even seem possible, but I think some of those people kind of made some of us think like, well, you know, maybe you could do something else. Right, again, I got lucky because it was baseball, but you know, just the fact that you could move out of Lee Summit, you could live someplace else, and that's even a possibility. And I don't know, there's just a lot of good people that probably nowadays the moms and dads would have said, well, you're not coaching enough correct technique, and you're not teaching my guy how to be a great baseball player, but just kind of taught you how to grow up and made the town a better place. I think that's the main thing. It's just Lee Summit was a good place to grow up because there were so many people involved in so many things, whether it was the merchants taking money out of their pocket to support the teams, or the dads taking time out of their schedule to help coach the teams, or the high school coaches that put in lots of extra hours. There's just a lot of things here that kind of helped develop young kids.
Thank you very much for your time today, Mike.
Sure.